The Model Millionaire. Unless you are wealthy, there is no sense in being an enchanting person. Romance is the privilege of the rich, not the profession of the unemployed. The poor should be practical. It is better to have a permanent income than to be fascinating. These are the truths of modern life which Hughie Erskine never understood. Poor Hughie. Intellectually, we must admit, he was not of much importance. He never said a brilliant or even an unpleasant thing in his life. But he was wonderfully good-looking, with his light brown hair, his classic profile, and his grey eyes. He was as popular with men as he was with women. He had every ability possible to survive in life, except that of making money. His father had left him his cavalry sword and a history of the Peninsular War in 15 volumes. He lived on only £200 a year that he had inherited from an old aunt. He had tried everything. He had gone to the stock exchange for 6 months. But what can a butterfly do among bears and bulls? He had been a tea merchant for a little longer, but he soon got tired of tea varieties. Then he had tried selling dry sherry. That did not work. The sherry was a little too dry. Eventually he became nothing. He was an enchanting, useless young man with a perfect profile and no profession. To make matters worse, he was in love. The girl he loved was Laura Merton. She was the daughter of a retired colonel who had lost his temper and his digestion in India. He had never found either of them again. Laura adored Hughie, and he was ready to kiss her feet. They were the most handsome couple in London, and did not have a penny between them. The colonel liked Hughie very much, but he would not hear of any plans for a marriage.
"Come to me, my boy, when you have got £10,000. Then we will see about it," he used to say.
Hughie looked very melancholy in those days and had to go to Laura for consolation. One morning, as he was on his way to Holland Park, where the Mertons lived, he stopped in to see his close friend, Alan Trevor. Trevor was an artist. He was considered a master with the brush, and his paintings were in great demand. At first he had been very attracted by Hughie, entirely because of his physical appearance.
"The only people a painter should know," he used to say, "are people who are uncultivated and beautiful, people who are a pleasure to look at and an intellectual rest to talk to." However, after Trevor got to know Hughie, he also liked him for his bright personality and his generous, impulsive nature. He had given him a permanent welcome to his studio. When Hughie entered, he found Trevor putting the finishing touches to a wonderful life-size picture of a beggar man. The beggar was standing on a raised platform in a corner of the studio. He looked like a wise old man with a very wrinkled face and a piteous expression. An old, torn brown cape was thrown over his shoulder, and his boots had big holes in them. He held an old stick in one hand, while with the other hand he extended a hat for alms.
"What an amazing model," whispered Hughie, as he shook hands with his friend.
"An amazing model?" shouted Trevor at the top of his voice. "I should think so. You don't find beggars like him every day.
My stars! What a painting Rembrandt would have made of him!
Poor old man, said Hughie. How miserable he looks. I suppose that to you artists his face is his fortune.
Certainly, replied Trevor. You don't want a beggar to look happy, do you?
How much does a model get for a session? Asked Hughie, as he found himself a comfortable seat.
A shilling an hour.
And how much do you get for your picture, Alan?
Oh, for this I get 2,000.
Pounds?
Guineas! Artists, poets and doctors always get guineas.
Oh, well, I think the model should have a percentage, cried Hughie, laughing.
They work quite as hard as you do. Nonsense! Nonsense! Why, look at the trouble of laying on the paint alone. You stand all day long at your easel. It's all very well for you to talk, Hughie, but I assure you that there are moments when art reaches the dignity of manual labour. But you mustn't talk. I'm very busy. Smoke a cigarette and keep quiet.
After some time, the servant entered and told Trevor that the frame maker wanted to speak to him.
Don't run away, Hughie, he said as he left the room. I'll be back in a moment.
The beggar man took advantage of Trevor leaving to rest for a moment on a wooden bench that was behind him. He looked so miserable that Hughie could not help pitying him. He felt in his pockets to see what money he had. All he could find was a sovereign.
Poor old fellow, he thought to himself.
He needs it more than I do. But it means no taxis for 2 weeks.
He walked across the studio and put the money in the beggar's hand. The old man was surprised. A small smile formed on his dry lips.
Thank you, sir, he said. Thank you.
When Trevor arrived, Hughie said his goodbyes and left. He could not help blushing a little at what he had done. He spent the rest of the day with Laura and had to walk home. That night, he walked into the Palette Club at about 11 o'clock and found Trevor sitting by himself in the smoking room. He was drinking a whiskey and soda.
"Well, Alan, did you finish the picture all right?" he asked, as he lit his cigarette.
"It's finished and framed, my boy," answered Trevor. "Oh, by the way, you have made a conquest. That old model you saw is quite devoted to you. I had to tell him all about you, who you are, where you live, what your income is, what prospects you have."
"My dear Alan," cried Hughie, "I shall probably find him waiting for me when I go home."
"But of course you're only joking."
"Poor old man. I wish I could do something for him. I think it's horrible that anyone should be so miserable. I have plenty of old clothes at home. Do you think he would want any of them? His old rags were falling apart."
"He looks splendid in them," said Trevor. "What you call rags, I call romance. What seems like poverty to you is picturesque to me. However, I'll tell him of your offer."
"Alan," said Hughie seriously, "you artists have no heart."
"An artist's heart is his head," replied Trevor. "Our business is to portray the world as we see it, not to reform it. And now, tell me how Laura is. The old model was quite interested in her."
"You don't mean to say you talked to him about her," said Hughie.
"Certainly I did. He knows all about the Colonel, the lovely Laura, and the £10,000.
"You told that old beggar all my private affairs," cried Hughie, now looking very red and angry.
"My dear boy," said Trevor, smiling, "that old beggar, as you call him, is one of the richest men in Europe. He could buy all London tomorrow and still have money.
He has a house in every capital and dines off gold plates. He can stop Russia from going to war when he chooses."
"What do you mean?" exclaimed Hughie. "What I say," said Trevor. "The old man you saw today in my studio was Baron Hausberg. He is a great friend of mine. He buys many of my pictures. A month ago, he paid me a large sum of money to paint him as a beggar. The fantasy of a millionaire. I must say he made a magnificent beggar in his rags. Actually, they are my rags. They're an old suit that I bought years ago."
"Baron Hausberg!" cried Hughie. "Good heavens! I gave him a sovereign." And he sank into an armchair. He was the picture of depression.
"Gave him a sovereign!" shouted Trevor. He exploded with laughter. "My dear boy, you'll never see it again."
"I think you should have told me, Alan," said Hughie sadly. "I wouldn't have made such a fool of myself."
"Well, to begin with, Hughie," said Trevor, "it never occurred to me that you went about distributing arms that way. I can understand you kissing a pretty model, but you're giving a sovereign to an ugly one. My God, no. Anyway, the fact is that officially I wasn't at home today. When you came, I didn't know whether Hausberg would like his name mentioned. He wasn't properly dressed."
"What an idiot he must think I am," said Hughie.
"Not at all. He was in a very good mood after you left. He kept laughing to himself and rubbing his hands together. I couldn't understand why he was so interested in you. But I see it all now. He'll invest your sovereign for you, Hughie, and pay you the interest every 6 months. He'll also have an excellent story to tell after dinner."
"I am an unlucky devil," said Hughie. "The best thing I can do is to go to bed. Alan, you mustn't tell anyone. I would be too embarrassed to show my face in public."
"Nonsense! It reflects the highest credit on your kind-hearted nature, Hughie. And don't run away. Have another cigarette. You can talk about Laura as much as you like." However, Hughie wouldn't stay. He walked home, feeling very unhappy. The next morning, as he was having breakfast, the servant brought him a card on which was written, "Monsieur Gustave Naudin, on behalf of Monsieur le Baron Hausberg." "I suppose that he has come for an apology," said Hughie to himself. He told the servant to show in the visitor. An old gentleman, with gold eyeglasses and grey hair, entered the room. He said, with a slight French accent, "Do I have the honour of speaking to Monsieur Erskine?" Hughie bowed. "I have come from Baron Hausberg," he continued. "The Baron..."
"I beg, sir, that you will give him my deepest apologies," said Hughie.
"The Baron," said the old gentleman with a smile, "has commissioned me to bring you this letter." He gave Hughie a closed envelope. On the outside was written, "A wedding present to Hugh Erskine and Laura Merton from an old beggar." And inside was a cheque for £10,000. When they were married, Alan Trevor was the best man, and the Baron made a speech at the wedding breakfast.
"Millionaire models," said Alan, "are rare enough, my God. But model millionaires are even rarer.